From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Another barrage of tweets and comments. It's happening between President Trump, California leaders, law enforcement, and Governor Brown. And the latest comments were prompted by a Sanctuary City roundtable held at the White House yesterday. That's where we're going to start a busy Capitol chat this week. Our Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler is joining us by phone today. Hi, Ben.
Hey, Beth, how are you?
So one word more than any other is being highlighted from that meeting yesterday, Ben. We just heard it in newscasts, and the word is animals. That came as a surprise.
Yeah, well, I think it's a word that really triggered a reaction in a lot of advocates for immigrants and in California, Democratic leaders. And you know, the reaction being, you know, animals isn't the word you would use to describe humans, whether they're coming to the country legally or not, and whether they're committing crimes or not. I think the president might feel that someone who commits a heinous act, someone who maybe commits murder, rapes someone, and maybe that person is an animal, that might have been what he was referring to. It certainly did not provoke a positive reaction from folks who have profoundly different political beliefs and ideological beliefs than the president.
Rather than repeat it, we're going to let you hear what the president said himself. So here's the comment yesterday by President Trump.
You wouldn't believe how bad these people are. These aren't people. These are animals. And we're taking them out of the country at a level and at a rate that's never happened before.
So most people think he's referring specifically to members of the gang, the MS-13 gang. But let's back up a minute, Ben. Explain this meeting yesterday and the agenda of the meeting.
Sure. So the president and his administration and California and Jerry Brown's administration, the legislature, have kind of been locked in this battle over immigration for the entirety of the Trump presidency. It culminated last year when the state legislature passed and Jerry Brown signed SB 54, which folks on both sides of the political divide call the sanctuary state law. But the governor and the measure's author, former state president Kevin DeLeon, they tend to not want to call it a sanctuary state law. They say that what it does is it's very specifically deals with, it does not prevent any law enforcement cooperation with federal immigration authorities on the worst of the worst, criminals who have committed crimes bad enough to be in state prison. But that does seek to limit law enforcement cooperation with federal authorities on lower level offenders. And so the Trump administration disagrees with that. And you've seen, ICE conduct raids in California, and you've seen Jeff Sessions travel to Sacramento earlier this year to announce a lawsuit challenging that law and a couple others that the legislature passed last year. And there was another war of words or tweets and what have you when the president sought to deploy the National Guard along the border, and Governor Brown said he would do so, but not to fight gangs and human trafficking and drug and gun smuggling, but would not do so to do anything to help contribute to a border wall or immigration enforcement, and coming to a head with this meeting, which we can talk more about.
So there were about a dozen California law enforcement members at this meeting, including Fresno Sheriff Margaret Mims. Her comments are on the front page of the Sacramento Bee today, covered heavily, of course, by the Fresno Bee. And one of her quotes is this: "If you were a terrorist, California is the place to come because it is now known as a sanctuary state," she said. "My fear is we're going to attract people intent on committing crimes." So the president was listening for feedback. Included in the group was the Stanislaus County Sheriff, Adam Christensen, and he also described his view of the job right now in his county.
We're focused on those individuals who victimize and exploit the weak and defenseless, and we should be able to do that without interference. Thank you for having
us. Thank you, Adam.
There was a lot of discussion, Ben, about the limitations of law enforcement right now because of sanctuary laws.
Yeah, and I think you'll get different reactions from different groups in law enforcement. For example, the sheriffs are always the ones who are most outspoken in their criticism of the new law. Police chiefs were actually negotiated from an opposed position or opposed without amendment to neutral last year. The governor insisted on amendments to the bill that got the police chiefs to come as neutral. And their thoughts are, look, we need the cooperation of people in our communities. The sheriffs have to run the jails and have to deal with, you know, their jobs are different from police chiefs. And they're also elected officials, unlike police chiefs who are appointed by mayors of large cities. Generally are more liberal in their politics. And so it does depend on what law enforcement group you speak with about SB 54, but I think it's probably undeniable that law enforcement in general struggle with that law. And I should also add that one thing that led to this meeting is that several jurisdictions in California have joined the Trump administration's lawsuit against California for the sanctuary state law, as well as the other pieces of legislation. And included are many of the jurisdictions who had representatives at the meeting at the White House yesterday.
Let me stay for a moment with comments from Sheriff Christensen, again from Stanislaus County. And this is in reference to an immigration detainer or detainers. And that's a notice that would be issued by ICE to inform another law enforcement agency that ICE will assume custody of someone that is already in that local or state law enforcement agency's custody. And this issue of detainers is important to law enforcement. So here again is Sheriff Adam Christensen.
The detainer issue for the sheriffs, that's a real problem for us. The federal court has said that honoring detainers is a violation of the Fourth Amendment. That puts us in a very precarious position from a liability standpoint.
So Ben, this becomes another place where state and federal, and in some cases local state and federal laws are in conflict, are clashing with each other. And I think that overall, everybody's looking for some direction for exactly where to go. And this isn't going to sit in a kind of idle on the fence position.
No, I mean, in some sense, you almost need the lawsuit from the Trump administration to help sort things out one way or another, just as maybe you need the lawsuit that California is filing against the Trump administration about the DACA folks, the Dreamers. You know, you need a ruling on that to help sort things out, because that's what courts are for. When there are conflicts between the federal government and the states, between state governments and locals, and it's going to take some sort of clarity. And the way our system of government works, that's what the courts do.
There was at least one reference to Jerry Brown, California's governor, that prompted a response from President Trump. So here's a clip of that exchange.
Jerry Brown wants to take this American dream from us. I see myself.
I'm going to be retired pretty soon.
I hope so.
End of the year.
Somebody said he's going to run for president. I said, please run.
Yeah, he's not running.
Yeah, he's not running, right.
He's not running.
take it from there. That prompted a response by the governor, but just back up and talk about that exchange for a moment.
Well, and I should say that because I was off yesterday, I didn't see the exchange. I just, you know, heard about it. But it appeared that one of the people in attendance was, you know, just made a reference about Jerry Brown. And, you know, the president is obviously, had some issues with the governor about immigration and climate change and the National Guard. And Willie Brown, the former assembly speaker and mayor of San Francisco, was on MSNBC the other day, and he was talking about Governor Brown. I think he was asked, you know, whether Eric Garcetti, the mayor of Los Angeles, or U.S. Senator Kamala Harris would be his pick or a better president. And Willie Brown said, well, let's not forget about Jerry Brown. So maybe that was what the president had heard or had heard someone tell him about, and maybe he thought that, you know, governor's running for president. Jerry Brown's not running for president. He's going to his farm in Colusa County when he leaves office in January.
He is tweeting, though. He tweeted about the comments. I'll read what he wrote. The president is lying on immigration, lying about crime, and lying about the laws of California. He wrote, flying in a dozen Republican politicians to flatter him and praise his reckless policies changes nothing. We, the citizens of the fifth largest economy in the world, are not impressed. Somewhat unusual that he tweeted, and in that way, isn't it?
It is a heightened level of rhetoric criticizing President Trump, and we have tended to see from the governor the president took office. In fact, early on last year, as legislative leaders sought to stake out some ground as anti-Trump, and we'll do whatever it takes to combat this, Assembly Speaker Anthony Rendon at the time questioned whether there would even be midterm elections because he didn't trust Trump to not be authoritarian. Governor Brown, the entire time, basically said, let's stay calm. And he didn't criticize the president in harsh language. He would raise a concern if he had it, but he would do so in a non-personal way. The exception to that rule has generally been on climate change, because that, of course, is the governor's one of his biggest priorities and issues. And so he went to China and to the UN, I think, last year, and he did elevate his profile on climate change and was more critical of the president. But on immigration, he started off a little bit calmer, and I think his rhetoric has escalated. Certainly when the suit was filed by Jeff Sessions, he and the attorney general held a news conference, and the governor definitely got into the fray rhetorically a bit more. But it is a pattern, this is a change from what he started out doing when the president took office last year.
So what's next in this? And I guess some of that question speaks to the timetable of the lawsuit.
Yeah, we're going to have to see what happens. The federal government is on offense on the lawsuit regarding the SB 54 and the other laws, and we'll have to see what happens. I don't know the timeline for that, but there is also the political timeline. And let's remember that there are 7 California congressional seats held by Republicans, half the 14-member delegation, Republican delegation, that Democrats are hoping to recapture this midterm election. There is a train of thought that Republican voters, base voters, Trump voters will be fired up and come out to vote the more talk there is about sanctuary state and the more talk there is about the lawsuit. And that's one reason some of the local governments are joining the lawsuit is Republicans in California, the leaders, think that that will help turn out the base in a year where otherwise turnout might be depressed for Republicans and Democrats might have an advantage. So there's that being one factor here. And so I doubt we've heard the last of President Trump talking about California and, as he calls it, the rebellion against California becoming a sanctuary state.
Right. You're listening to Cap Radio's Ben Adler. He's talking to us by phone today. California's relatively new end-of-life law was overturned Tuesday because a judge said the way that it was passed was unconstitutional. Do you want to expand on the judge's decision, Ben, and talk about what's happening over the weekend?
Sure. And for folks who might be wondering why I'm on the phone, it's because I'm over here at the Capitol at the Assembly floor session today. It was here in this building, in this chamber, and the red carpeted Senate across the way, where a couple of years back, the end-of-life law was passed. But before it was passed, it failed. It stalled in an Assembly committee after passing the Senate. And it had some opposition from not just religious groups, but other groups, too, and some groups who advocate for, and lawmakers who advocate for low-income Californians were concerned that maybe this law would be used by poor folks who are getting sick who would worry about the cost impact on their families and they would choose to end their lives prematurely, not necessarily because there wouldn't be a cure, but because they couldn't afford the cure or they didn't want their families to have to afford the care. And so what ended up happening is the governor had called a special session on health care for the unrelated subject of Medi-Cal funding and a way of getting a complicated funding source that I won't get into here. But the end-of-life law ended up getting passed through that special session. The judge said that was not okay, and he struck the law down.
So he didn't speak or write to the content of the law at all. He's talking about procedure, and he allowed 5 days for an emergency appeal, which isn't business days. That's 5 days and counting. So right now the Attorney General's office is involved in processing that appeal. Is there any update to that, Ben?
Not that I have seen, but I would. I believe Javier Becerra, the Attorney General, is a supporter of the law. I don't know that, but I think I read it somewhere, and presume that he would, get ready to file a lawsuit, file an appeal. One thing I want to point out, if this goes to appeal, is I was a little surprised by the ruling in this way. Courts tend to let the legislature set its own rules and run its own business without interference, unless the voters step in with a constitutional amendment and say something needs to be done this way. So, for example, Proposition 54 passed in 2016 that requires all bills be in print for 72 hours in their final form before their final votes. So if the legislature were to violate that, you would see a court step in and say, no, you can't do that. But I think back to 2011, Jerry Brown's first year as governor, when the legislature passed a budget, and the controller at the time, John Chung, who's now running for governor, said this is not a balanced budget, and he docked the lawmakers their paychecks for a couple weeks under a recently passed state ballot measure. Well, the court said Chung was wrong, that he couldn't do that, that if the legislature passed the budget and said it was balanced, then that's good enough for the court, because the courts tend not to meddle in internal legislative affairs. That's why, and obviously I got to say, I'm not a lawyer, but that's why I was surprised by this particular ruling and why I do think the law might have a chance on appeal of being upheld.
Well, it has triggered other reaction because there are other groups besides the group or groups representing people with disabilities, Catholic bishops, for example, representatives of the Catholic Church and others for religious reasons oppose this bill as well. So it is possible that though the judge acknowledged opposition and made this decision based on a technicality, it could be, in addition to the court appeal, kicked right back to the legislature, and then another vote can be taken during this session, correct?
Oh, sure. That could certainly happen. The legislature's makeup is such that I would expect the bill to get through. But you never know. Stranger things have happened at the state capitol.
All right. The 5 days takes us to next week, so we'll pick up on this story Monday or maybe on Tuesday. Before I let you go, anything new in the governor's race that we should note?
Just about everyone is on, and independent groups are on TV, and this multidimensional chess game is almost like a 10-dimensional chess game. You've got the Newsom, Villaraigosa, and Chung all on TV. Delaine Easton's campaign put out an ad, though I'm not sure if they've actually made a buy on TV yet, but they're saying that they will. They don't have that much money. John Cox is on TV on the Republican side. Travis Allen's been doing mailers and radio ads. You've got a bunch of independent groups supporting, the big one supporting Villaraigosa, backed by charters. They've raised well above $10 million. And then you've got unions coming out in support of Newsom, and you've even got a group of healthcare providers, doctors and dentists, powerful influential groups who are backing Newsom but attacking John Chung. And that's a bit of a puzzler on its surface, but it's something we can get into another time. But it just shows we are in the height of voting. And it's worth noting, with so many people voting by mail right now, and five counties, including Sacramento, with this new voter's choice system where every voter is sent to vote by mail ballot, more and more people have already voted, and the campaign is over.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, to think that all of this was typically the lead up to Election Day, but all of these ads, all the campaigning, the rhetoric, the fact-checking, it's all happening right now as people are sitting in their kitchens, filling out the ballots and dropping them off. So, Wills, I'm interested to hear about voter turnout in this new way, as so many people are. Well, Ben, thanks. You've given us a lot to think about and talk about today. I appreciate it.
Sure, anytime. And just a reminder that we've got two really good political podcast up on iTunes and the NPR One app and wherever you get your podcast. My podcast with each candidate on the governor's race and Ben Bradford's Keys to the House podcast about the battle for control of the House of Representatives and how it runs through California.
That's right. Podcasts by the Bens. So thanks a lot.
New series.
Right. Thank you, Ben.
You got it.
You can find continuing coverage of the end-of-life law and more about the appeal, more on the sanctuary story, and links to the podcast. It's all at capradio.org. This is Insight on Capital Public Radio. Mm-hmm.